From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 544, Nano Server and Containers with guest Jason Helmick. Recorded Tuesday, July 25th, 2017. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Today, my guest is Jason Helmick, who's a 25-year IT veteran and author of Pluralsight. He's an avid supporter of the DevOps PowerShell community as board member and CFO/COO of PowerShell.org and the PowerShell DevOps Global Summit. He's also a Windows PowerShell MVP, and Jason focuses on automation and configuration management for DevOps and has co-authored several PowerShell, Microsoft Exchange, and IIS-related discussions on Microsoft Virtual Academy. Welcome back, sir.
Hey, thanks, Richard, for having me back.
Always a pleasure. And I actually have a comment to read from a listener. This comes from show 539, the one I did with David Desneves. When he was talking about PowerShell, using it to improve help desk workflows, which I thought was brilliant. Just such a clever idea of a way to get PowerShell into an organization and show its power and really treat it properly where multiple people are using it. And I think David Dyer agrees with me because he said PowerShell to automate tier one and tier two support processes is a great topic. I started learning PowerShell while I still worked on one foot in the service space and found a ton of ways to streamline processes. If it can be repeated, script it.
You know, I think that's fantastic. When we first started, a lot of us working with PowerShell and using it, it really wasn't meant for help desk, right? The administrative privileges that you needed to do certain things, that kind of thing. And help desk, it was often viewed as, you know, the kind of the first IT job. So you probably didn't have the skill set. But it's been great to see that over the years, that's actually changed where help desk is, you know, it's a very important position. Mm-hmm. And being able to have people use PowerShell and to solve problems. And now with just enough administration where we can constrain those endpoints so that they don't have to be administrators on boxes, I think this is going to be very helpful to all tiers in IT.
I don't disagree. And you know, the other thing is, it's one thing to use PowerShell as your secret toolbox, you know, that USB key you carry around that makes you magic. But where I got to with David, we were talking about this, is when you have a group of tech support folks, you want to share those scripts amongst them. A, you build the script differently because it's not necessarily you that's going to be running it. So it's got to be a little more careful with its inputs, a little clearer what's going on, maybe some help. It's got to be source managed. So if anybody else makes modifications to it, you got a good track record on that. I just like the place we're getting to when you start thinking about PowerShell that way, as this is genuine asset to the organization.
Well, I really like what you just said, because that's really what I've been focusing a lot of my time on, is more of the DevOps side and the release pipeline. And you brought up some really important points. Mm-hmm. One, yes, we need to follow best practices so our code can be maintained from other people, because we're not always going to be the ones doing it. And source control and actually getting people to start to use a release pipeline. You're right. We are moving to a new age where finally this feels like it should. It's operating like it should. We're being able to get deployments done and break things and fix things faster and easier because we're starting to work together as teams on this. So I think that's a really important point.
Yeah. Are you willing to let someone else run your script? Are you sure your script won't cause more harm than good? Can somebody else learn it, trust it, know what happens when it goes wrong, debug it? I think there's another level beyond that of actually adding to it, making modifications to it, you know. But when you think about the evolution of a tech support desk, those kinds of powers, and the scenario David painted was a brilliant one, uninstalling and reinstalling Java. Just like a huge time sink for a help desk person, right? That's like 40 minutes. And it's entirely scriptable if the script is smart enough and you've got good remote execution controls and stuff so that you can literally fire it off and go do something else while it's going on rather than having to supervise the thing the whole time. It's such a good idea. And I think it just ups the level of PowerShell all around.
Oh, I totally agree. And in a lot of the areas that I'm working in with infrastructure from code and being able to rebuild the entire base infrastructure of a company. So, you know, not just bring up servers, but bring up all of the services, so everything from DNS, DHCP, you know, whatever messaging services, if you're using them internally, Active Directory, being able to rebuild that on a moment's notice. Because, you know, I have the same fears that a lot of people in our industry have, that at some point there may be that piece of malware that takes out both our site and our backup site. And we're going to need to be able to rebuild it maybe in the cloud really fast. So configuration management and doing that with PowerShell is really, a lot of companies are starting to do that now. And I'm so glad to see that that's finally happening.
So David, thank you so much for your comment. A Run As Radio mug is on its way to you. And if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com. So Jason, I know you're a PowerShell guy, which is why I wanted to read that comment and just sort of have that little conversation around the fact that PowerShell's growing up, new versions. I mean, we've had a lot of announcements here. A friend of mine who's an IT guy is freaking out because they're deprecating PowerShell 2 with the latest updates to the operating system, along with poor old MS Paint and a few other tools.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of an interesting thing. A lot of friends that they still need to support PowerShell 2 on older systems.
Right.
But I think that it's I mean, we are at that point now. We do have to start driving forward and moving forward. And I think out of a lot of the announcements you've seen, and I know a lot of people are up in arms about Nano and trying to wrap their heads around their future infrastructure and a release pipeline. It is time that we start to move forward on some of this stuff. And we need to deprecate some of this stuff so we can just get rid of it.
And it's not like PowerShell 2 is going to burst into flames one day. It's just they're going to stop patching it and you're not going to get some of the latest features as new stuff comes along on Win 10.
Yeah, and it kind of makes sense because, I mean, we're really past the point of needing to support PowerShell 2 and to begin with. I mean, we've been down this road where, you know, there's still PowerShell 3, there's still PowerShell 4, but really the place that you want to be is at the latest version, PowerShell 5. And of course, my favorite thing is the cross-platform version, you know, the future version of PowerShell, because I can use that on everything.
Yeah. So it means taking a little bit of time to move yourself forward and keep going on it. And you said Nano Server. Speaking of sort of changing roles, well, we better start from the beginning here. Because for a long time, I thought Nano Server is just this ultra lightweight version of server I was going to use for specific applications, you know, scaling out websites, that kind of thing. But it sounds like Microsoft's got a different idea.
Well, you know, that again is really interesting because I thought the exact same thing that you did. Actually, I took it a step further thinking that Nano Server may someday be the future replacement for Core just because it was faster, you know, more secured. And so they were really working on bringing on all those infrastructure services into it. In fact, about 9 months ago, I did a couple of free Pluralsight videos with Andrew Mason, who's one of the principal PMs working on that. One of the videos was all IT based on infrastructure, and the other one was all developer based on applications and containers and that kind of thing. And so I really thought that that was going to be a pretty good strategy right up until they changed it. And the interesting thing about that is at first I think I was a little bit taken aback. I happen to be working with a customer that's using Nano and testing their workloads on it. And the announcement happened while I was on site. And so they were in shock too. But, you know, there's an important point, I think, coming out of this is that they're changing the focus for a reason. They're changing the focus because I think we're all starting to change our focus. It's not about the server anymore, and it's not about infrastructure services anymore. I think, as a matter of fact, recently, I think you were talking to Jeffrey Snover, and Snover said something really interesting. He said, you know, a company's competitive advantage is not that they have a really good running DNS.
Right.
And so I think that this change that they're making, where they're basically taking out all the infrastructure services for Nano and making it for basically containers only.
Right.
As I'm thinking about what a business needs, they need services, their applications. They don't care about servers. In IT, we care about servers because that's been our challenge. How do we deploy a server faster? And I remember talking to Snover originally about Nano when he said, you know, what's the greatest thing holding you back from being able to destroy and deploy your immutable servers? And well, it's time. It's how long it takes server to install.
Right. Yeah.
Well, they solved that with Nano. But you know what? As we're going forward, that's less and less what our problem is. I spend a lot of time working with Azure Stack simply because a lot of customers, there are things they cannot put for compliance reasons, things in the cloud. What the customer wants is they want the platform side of this. They want their applications on it. They don't care what VMs are running where. And if it needs to get destroyed, destroy it.
I mean, that's what's happened, is it's just become plumbing now. I don't think about this. I just think about the services I'm delivering. The how those things are composed is almost secondary to the point. Just deliver the service.
You know, and I think that's a really good point, because when I put my DevOps hat on, that's what my goal is. My goal is to deliver services. And since I'm more of an IT ops person, I'm thinking of, you know, yes, I want to get these services out, but I don't really care where or how many of these little OSs it takes. And I think this approach with containers is something that, I don't know, with a lot of customers, they're not quite there yet.
Right.
Their developers aren't there yet, but that is the future.
You know, what's interesting, Jason, is Microsoft has always been a company that is like, it's your foot. Here's 100 options. There's 50 ways to do this. I think we may be a little shocked that they're being opinionated right now and saying, no, containers are the future, and we are going to focus our energy on being better and better at containers rather than every other option that might be out there, to the point where they're talking about taking capability away from NanoServer.
You know, what's really funny about that, Richard, is I was thinking about this a couple of weeks ago when I was working with a customer on it, and I was telling them the same thing, that, you know, I really like this current version of Microsoft, because instead of just listening to customers and, like you said, giving us all of these options and letting us figuring it out.
Right.
They're showing strong leadership mm-hmm. on what they know to be right, well, for them in Azure, but they also know it to be right for the future. And there's some really smart people there. You know Aaron Chappell, who's the general manager of server. She's brilliant. This is coming from people that know what they're doing. And I think that's really important that people understand that Microsoft is going to do what's best for the industry. They're going to listen to customers, and they did. Customers want applications. They don't want to have to think about servers. So containers make sense.
My concern with containers, and I think a lot of folks when they first dive into this, is it seems complicated. Like, we always worried about virtual machine sprawl, but you ain't seen nothing yet when you start talking about container sprawl.
Oh, I totally agree.
It's a trick. You're talking, with any substantial service, hundreds of containers. It does take some tooling and some discipline about how you organize them.
But I think you also brought up the real point to that, because I remember the days when virtualization started to take off and all of the concerns and worry. And yes, there was a lot of sprawl. And yes, we did have to figure out how to manage that. But I think it's important for people to understand that in IT, that's what our job is, mm-hmm. is to figure out how to best manage this stuff and then either build the tooling or use the correct tooling to make sure that we are doing it correctly. I refer to this oftentimes as the way that we've let security go. Most companies, security is actually pretty bad in their network. And it's because it was mismanaged. I mean, there were users that have more privileges to a share than they're supposed to, all of that kind of stuff. And this is now a time when this has to stop and we have to start managing this. And I think containers is going to be that next evolution where we're going to learn how to do it and we're going to find the best practices for it. And some people are going to mismanage it, but then they'll get pulled back into it. So I think that this is going to be challenging, but it's the right direction to go.
Of course, our instinct, because we're geeks, is to figure out the tech problem. And right away, you're presenting me with what's actually a governance and policy problem.
Yeah, and I guess it's kind of funny is that I've been thinking, I mean, I've changed in my IT career a lot too. I'm a geek. I think about the problem and I want to technically solve things. And I get to do that all the time. But spending so much time in DevOps means I'm also having to think about governance and policies and people and working together as teams so that we can accomplish these goals. And I think that's what we kind of are doing overall in IT, especially when we start to look at things like Nano and containers and how are we going to do all of this in a release pipeline. I think that we're all evolving in this manner. And quite honestly, businesses are forcing us to evolve in that manner.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I like the idea that from an IT perspective, we could present to the company, to the enterprise architect types, to the developers, hey, we see containers as important. The new tool is coming this way. Here's our thoughts on how we can start implementing this, even ahead of the developer saying, we want to deploy in containers.
And that's one of the reasons why I'm glad Microsoft, since they made this announcement, they made this decision, because now this conversation is starting to happen, that your development teams may not be right at the point of utilizing containers, but that is the direction that we're going. Mm-hmm. We have that infrastructure for you. And from the IT perspective, I think our responsibility is to understand that nerdy technology so that we can have it in place and we understand what it takes to manage it from the best we can, and then make that available to the developers and to the business. I mean, really, that's kind of what the whole point is in everything that we're doing now with DevOps, the release pipeline, all of that stuff is you want to make the company so it has a competitive advantage. And whether that's public cloud and Azure or using Azure Stack for the things that you can't have on the public side, if it's using Nano and containers and making your apps so that they're portable, they can go between the clouds that you have, that's really what is important to the business. And I think IT needs to step up and become more of that.
I totally agree. Jason, give me 1 second here to pay the bills. Have you looked at Google Cloud Platform yet? GCP supports Windows Server 2008, 2012, 2016, as well as SQL Server 2012, 2014, 2016 Standard, Web, and Enterprise editions. Your developers can build their ASP.NET applications directly on Google Cloud Platform with Visual Studio integration. Prefer containers? Google Cloud Platform is the original Kubernetes container environment. And if you need help, GCP has a great set of partners, including Capgemini, Neudesic, and Magenic to help you get your workloads across. Go to gcp.runasradio.com to get your free trial today. And we're back. You're listening to Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell talking to Jason Helmick. We're talking about Nano Servers changes and this focus on containers, I guess both on-premise and up in Azure and everywhere else, because containers are getting widely supported now. Should we go over the fundamentals here, my friend? Like, why do I, as an IT person, like containers? Why does this make my life better?
Well, you know, the best way that I can often talk to IT people about this is did you ever install something on a server and then go to install another product on the server and have, well, we called it DLL hell.
Yeah.
One DLL would overwrite the other. That was a great example.
Yeah, they were great.
And so that would destroy our server, would destroy our lives. It would make the weekend just painful, painful. Containers are isolated from the operating system. So a lot of people like to think of them as small VMs, and that may not be a bad way to think about it, but it's for the application and only the components that application needs. That makes it faster, smaller, more secured, and no conflicts. And you can destroy and recreate these things in a blink of an eye. And so the intent that I work with is immutable servers, being able to destroy and deploy instantly. Well, we can do that now with the applications if we're doing it in containers. And the Linux folks have been doing this for quite some time. So it is definitely a complete mental shift from where we've been. But that's why I think containers are so valuable. It solves so many problems.
Well, I do like it from the perspective of, yes, like virtualization, but virtualization after configuration as code became the default. So that, you know, everything you do in a container model involves essentially running a script that generates the thing. You would never, there is no click-through path to making a container. There's only one way to do it.
Yeah, and I think you're finding a lot of people that are seeing the future and they're saying, okay, I better get caught up on this technology. Sometimes that's the first initial impact they have to face.
Right.
Is there's not going to be a click through for this.
Yeah, there simply will not be one. You better get those scripting chops working, because I mean, there's an upside to this too. Talk about repeatability. And the big one I've been talking to IT guys, because I've always dealt on the website here all the way through the stack, is you can now hand a set of configurations to developers so that they're building on the same container architecture that's in production. It may not be as large or as many, but it literally is the same configuration. And that's a whole class of deployment bugs eliminated.
Yeah, and think about this. There's a mental change that I think, and this scares a lot of people when I say this, but we need to rush to failure and not be afraid of failure, because if we rush to failure, we can make a lot of fixes. One of the purposes to a release pipeline and to DevOps is just what you said, is that because we can clean all of this stuff up quickly and easily now, we can make adjustments and changes, new versions, whatever it is it takes. And if we break something, we roll back a version. And we know that we can do that quickly, safely, and securely. And so this is part of that process of making the business be able to move forward faster and be more resilient when something goes wrong.
Yeah, that granularization suddenly comes into play, that now you're not updating a whole app when you rebuild a server. You are just updating a service, or heck, running two versions of the same service, which I can't tell you how often that's existed in my life as well. That it's like, okay, well, I've got some clients still dependent on the old version of the service, but new clients coming in that want the new version of the service. Let's just run both and make sure the footprint and the overhead of that is as low as possible.
Yeah. And I think for developers, this really makes it easier for them to both move forward. And also when they're developing, since they're developing in a known environment and we're deploying the same known environment, we all know from IT perspectives how simpler our lives are going to be. And basically, quite honestly, you know, I came up in an AS400 environment where, as an ops guy and the developers, we actually went to lunch together. We liked each other. We were friends. In IT, it's gotten to that point to where developers throw things over the walls. IT guys throw things over the wall. This is part of our opportunity to finally stop doing that and focus on what's important, which is the success of the business being able to move forward. And so I think that Nano, containers, whatever technologies that we're doing, if they help us achieve that goal, I think then it's well worth it.
Absolutely. I like being on the same side of a problem too. I think part of the challenge, and I wonder if it's just because our teams got so much bigger. My job in IT is to gather as much data about the problems happening in production and then bring it to the everybody so that we're all on the same side of the problem. Like, these are the error reports we're getting. I don't want to interpret them. I don't want to lay blame. I want to just sort of show and say, can we work on this? Can we figure out what's going on here? Because maybe it's code, maybe it's configuration. You know, there's any number of things that might be going on. But until everybody's actually looking at the same problem and kind of on the same side of the problem, you're just not going to get there.
Yeah. And I mean, let's face it. And I actually like solving problems that way. That's how I grew up in IT, solving problems. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets their minds together because no one person is the most brilliant one. Well, except Jeffrey Snover. Anyways,
not gonna argue with you.
But really, what kind of the point is that and we'll take something that everybody's familiar with. If you have a commerce site running, if the web servers all go down, I'm pretty sure the CFO doesn't really care whose problem it is. Yeah. They want everybody to fix it as soon as possible so that they can service their customers. So the blame game and all of that, yeah, it needs to stop. And we need to work together as teams on this stuff. And it's more fun that way anyways. IT and the ops side and the dev side, it's just more fun when we can share information and learn a little bit about each other.
Yeah, and we really are on the same side of the problem. We're all going to live and die together anyway. And these tools feel like they're going to give me more capability. I've got two concerns. One is instrumentation of containers in general, or just being able to understand, are they healthy? Are they sick? Are they in pain? Like, are they constrained for resources? That sort of thing. Do you have specific thoughts around that?
I'd like to put it is kind of, this is going to sound real kind of Microsoft fanboy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to be that way, because it's just been my experience over the last few years, especially with the automation side and Azure, the cloud side, and now with Azure Stack. There is one thing that I absolutely know. We're going to have some abilities to monitor and check on health and mediate some of those health issues. But I also know that Microsoft is trying to automate this as much as possible.
Sure.
They're trying to make it healthy as possible. And what they don't want to do, and I face this with Azure Stack quite a bit, they don't want to bubble up every possible alert because you're going to turn them all off.
Right.
They want to make sure you're getting the information you need when you need to make a phone call to somebody. And if they can take care of it and solve the problem, that's what they're going to do inside the technology. So as we move forward, I expect to see that being applied here as well. And since Nano is a part or can be a part of the Azure Stack side with the containers and with Azure at some point, I'm really thinking that it's all going to come together, and that's the direction they're going to kind of head towards.
You know, another thing that's recently been in the news has been the shakeup on the sales side of Microsoft. And I feel like that's just a good thing for us, because Microsoft's getting out of the business of selling boxes of software. They're now about how much we consume Azure. You know, you can set up an Azure account for $0. They only make money if you use it.
And I am definitely, I think that's one of the most, and I think I heard Jeffrey Snover talk about that. And it's definitely one of the things that I appreciate the most from Microsoft. That conversation of, hey, look, if you go buy a box, you pay for the box, you take the box home, we don't care what you do with the box. You might get it to work. You might not get it to work. Oh, well, you paid for it. We're done with you.
Right.
But the pay-as-you-go model means that Microsoft is invested in your success more than they ever have been before. And when you take that product home and you start to use that product, they want you to be successful with that product because they want you to keep paying for that product. And so I think that's what's really kind of changed the focus at Microsoft overall. We keep hearing them say we're focusing on what our customers need. And this is one of those indications of why they're doing it, because they're so invested into making sure you're successful so that you will continue to buy services from them.
Sure. And it strikes me that the container model doesn't have to be a greenfield thing, that we're going to be able to take these sovereign servers and start peeling services off of them into containers. So for a long time, our applications are going to be a mixture of old style servers running pieces of the app and these new style containers running other pieces of the app.
Yeah, and I totally agree. You and I have been around long enough to know that nothing's going to happen overnight. No. And that something like on this scale, we're talking about changes to architecture. Mm-hmm. This is going to take time to take companies through and to get through, but it's going to be worth it as they move through. And I talk about this with customers that are still dealing with Snowflake servers, and they want to get them under configuration management, but they haven't. Well, that's okay. It takes time. You strip one thing away at a time until you finally remove the fact that it's a Snowflake.
Yeah. There's now with the moment where there's nothing important in it anymore. It's like, you know, we could turn that off. And that's right. That's like a great moment, right? The day you turn off a server and nothing changes, everything's running fine. It's like, we were literally had no dependency on that server anymore. I think I'd throw a party. Like that's
certainly throw a big party, yeah. Because those are great days when you can turn off things you no longer need and nothing breaks.
Yeah, no consequences. And it's just a VM. You're just going to turn it off. It's not like you're going to delete anything. If we miss something, we'll turn it back on again. But for now, right. At least it's out of circulation and no longer have a dependency. I also think it'd be an interesting piece of math to break down what that infrastructure as a service VM is costing you versus what those individual service fabric, you know, containers would cost you over time. I wonder if we're actually going to be saving money by this decomposition.
Well, and I think that that's going to become part of that business-sided conversation, because mm-hmm. as I'm working with customers that, like I said, that have been testing Nano for their workloads, especially if they're doing heavy processing workloads, yeah, Nano makes a big difference to them. And it's going to make a big difference to them in cost simply because it's faster, it's lighter weight, they don't have to maintain it. And I want to be careful about saying that, but it doesn't require all the updates as much. So cost is going to go down.
Because it's just less surface area in Nano.
Yeah, much less.
Yeah. You know, the big one for me coming at it from a web perspective when I was first playing with Nano Server back in the old days, and I know that we're going to, old days being what, last year,
right.
Was because it was 64-bit only. You found out if you really had built a 64-bit only app, because all so often there's drivers or dependencies or something that it was just thunking down to 32-bit and there was no way to know. Just because you said this app was 64-bit and deployed it, it wasn't until you ran it on Nano Server where there's only 64-bit and then it failed. You were like, hey, look, a 32-bit dependency we didn't know about.
Along with that, a lot of people also found out really fast that the performance problems that they were having with their app were really their app and not the web server,
yes.
That was causing it. So, yeah, I mean, totally Nano true. Was, I love Nano as an infrastructure server, but quite honestly, I'm fine that, you know, Core can bring us some infrastructure services, and Nano should be that as small as they can get it and provide us with containers. I think that's a good decision on their part, mm-hmm. and one that shows clear leadership on and direction for the future.
And if you bring up an interesting point, if somebody's just not prepared to embrace containers, you can't get leadership on board. It's not like you're hooped. There's still Core. There's still the old ways of doing things that are not going to mysteriously burst into flames. You can keep running IIS. You can keep running monolith servers. Try and get them as configuration as code so you can rebuild them relatively fast. They'll not be as quick as containerized versions, but they can still be pretty painless.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. One that we're probably going to have to make a lot and to remind people that, you know, this move to containers is a good thing. We expect it to take some time. Mm-hmm. And until then, we still have core and we still have the old ways of doing things. I totally agree with you. And in some cases, that might be the best answer for a while, is using core, doing the configuration management so you can destroy and deploy, making your servers immutable until the time comes when your developers or other developers that are writing applications for you make it to the container side.
Right. Yeah, it's you can't go there by yourself. It is going to take a group of people to make that happen.
Yeah, certainly will.
Well, Jason, a half hour disappears when I chat with you. It's not always different than the conversations we have at the conferences anyway.
I know, and I really enjoy talking with you. It's just like time just evaporates completely. So,
but I'm glad to sort of put to bed this conversation around NanoServer to some degree and to see that it is an intentional, intelligent direction. I mean, I'll include a link to the blog posts. These blog posts, they're written so politically carefully, you know, for better or worse, that in some ways I'm happy we can just sort of distill this down and say, hey, look, this is where Microsoft's going. This is why they're going there. Here's our choices going forward. Because I think we've got some good options. They're not taking anything away from us, really. They're just focusing in on what's more important.
And I think that that's what Microsoft should be doing. And quite honestly, I'm glad that they are, because direction is something that the industry needs.
Yeah.
And Microsoft is a clear leader. And you know what? They're running Azure. They know this better than anybody else at this point. Mm-hmm. So I'm perfectly glad to, you know, start going in that direction, because, well, in my business, I think that's the right direction as well.
Jason Helmick, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, sir. It was great being with you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.